I believe in free will. Hey, I have no choice. I have very logical reasons for believing in things that logic and reason can never teach me. It's kind of ironic, but the more complexity science finds in life, the less likely becomes the whole scenario in theory they use to explain its origin. The really amazing thing is that quantum physics shows that nature, at its most fundamental level, strains human credulity and knowledge in ways biblical faith never does. Hi, Cliff Goldstein here. Happy to welcome you to the program. The texts I want to open with today are from the book of Joshua, chapter 24, verses 14 and 15. Now, therefore, fear the Lord, serve him with sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the river and in Egypt. And if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourself this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your father served on the other side of the river or the god of the Amorites. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Now, this is the context. After so long a wait, they finally made an end to the promised land. This was great. Finally, they were there, and the Lord had fought all these battles for him, for them. But you know, in one sense, the battles really only just began. Yeah, they were now in the land that God had promised them many centuries earlier to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But they were there for a reason. They were to be witnesses to the world of the gospel and the plan of salvation, of the true God who made the heavens and the earth. You know, they were to be his people, and they were not to lose sight of that either. Hence, the call there in Joshua, choose you this day whom you will serve. Notice, they had to choose. Will you choose the Lord or not? They had a choice. They were not forced to serve the Lord. They had to choose to do it. You know, I never told my kids when they were young, when they first learned how to drive, I don't want you driving to the moon. I never said, they didn't have a choice. They couldn't do it. When I told them, I don't want you texting when you're driving, all the luck that did. I don't want you speeding when you're driving. That was different. They had to choose not to do these things. And anyway, here in the heart of the Old Testament, we see the reality of what I believe is a crucial theme in the Bible, if not explicitly taught, but implicitly taught. And that is of moral freedom, moral choice, and free will. You know, to this day, one of the biggest and most controversial debates, I mean, at least among people who care about these things, is the question of free will. Do we as humans really have free will? We might think we do, but we can be deceived, can't we? I mean, reality often doesn't appear to us. It isn't really the way it seems. You know, funny, recently I read a novel by a Japanese writer named Harakuri Murakami, and he said something that really caught my attention. When we look up at the sky in the day, our sight completely deceives us regarding what's up there. The sky is filled with stars, but in the daylight, we can't see them. You know, it's kind of ironic if you think about it. Stars are one of the few things that light, which usually reveals what's hidden, actually, in this case, hides us. But my point is really that is reality is not necessarily what we see, what we feel, or we sense. And for many, this is the question of free will. We might think we have free will. We might feel that we do. But do we? I mean, after all, it's ask somebody struggling with an addiction about free will free choice. See what they say. I grew up watching my father struggle with tobacco. I saw him time and time again, for the sake of himself, for the sake of his family, to quit smoking. Yet the day he died at 86 years old, guess what? He was still smoking. And then what do you do? What do you do with the dude in Romans 7, the man of Romans 7? For the good that I would do, I do not do, but the evil I will not do, that I practice. Doesn't sound like a whole lot of free will, free choice here. It's a deep and difficult question. You know, we've all heard the story of Isaac Newton sitting under an apple tree and the apple falling on his head, and Newton discovers gravity. You know, now the fact of the matter is, there really is good reasons to believe that the story of the apple falling on his head is true, okay? But what happened with the story is much more complicated than him just discovering gravity. Everybody already knew about gravity. I mean, things fell to the ground. There was a reason for it. But what Newton did was he caused people to understand that the power that dropped the apple on his head was the same power that kept the moon in orbit around the Earth. In fact, it was the same power he came to see that explained the motion of the entire solar system. And today we believe that gravity is one of the four fundamental forces in all the known universe. And that what Newton did when he wrote it all up was show that much of the world worked by natural laws. That all these things that happened could be explained ideally by mathematical formulas. It was a stunning achievement, one that truly changed the history of the world. In fact, it led to an idea which is called the clockwork universe. It's this idea that the universe was like a wind-up clock. And you did wind it up, and all it did, it would move according to predetermined laws and rules and plans. A Frenchman named Laplace argued that if it were possible, he didn't believe it were possible, but if it were possible to know the position of every atom, every molecule in the universe, to know it at one point, then guess what? If everything followed mathematical formulas and laws, then you could tell the future. You would know beforehand, based on these laws, exactly what would happen a minute from now, a year from now, 1,000 years from now. It was all already there. But see, it wouldn't just happen, though, that we could tell about the weather. We know what the weather would do. We know what the stars would do. But ideally, we would also know all the choices that people made beforehand. Our choices would already be known even before we did it. Not that Laplace believed anyone could do that, but his point was that if we could know all this stuff, we could predict the future. Now, if that point were true and correct, what would that do to our free will? I mean, if someone could predict at any given time, by principle, using a mathematical formula, what you're going to choose to eat tomorrow for breakfast, what does that do to your free will? Think about it. Maybe you chose to eat a jelly donut for breakfast this morning. I hope not. But it was because a whole host of physical and chemical and biological factors that you had no choice in, and they caused you to desire a jelly donut, and you, acting on the desire, ate that jelly donut. Now, I'm not saying it's true. I'm just saying that it's a reasonable conclusion to draw, which is why many people have drawn it. So if the Newtonian universe is right, we got an awful hard time proving free will. Now, let's jump ahead to a time after Newton. There was this young student, obviously very bright, and he didn't know what to study. And he told the teacher he wanted to study physics. Now, this is in the mid to late 1800s. And the teacher says, don't study physics. We know everything there is to know about physics. Everything is discovered. Do something else. Well, the lad went on and did it anyway, and it turned out his name was Max Planck, and he went on to lay the foundation of quantum physics, and it totally revolutionized everything we understood, and it completely overturned Newton's clockwork universe on its head. Now, the gist of quantum physics, and I'm not going to get into that now, but the gist of it is you get down to the quantum level, and everything is statistical, probabilistic. Certain things happen with no reason for them to happen. It's not that we don't know the reason. There is no reason for it. At this level, everything happens purely by chance. Now, if you think that saves free will, guess again, okay? Sure, everything might not be predetermined, but what is our free will if everything at the most basic level happens by chance? Dicey, like throwing dice or spinning a roulette wheel. How free are we then? So I want to say quantum physics doesn't bode any better for free will than does classical physics. Now, there are other problems as well with this, okay? Other problems as well. If it were true 1,000 years ago that God knew I would be standing here giving this talk on Hope Channel this day, if it was true 1,000 years ago that God knew it, did I have any choice at all other than being here, standing here, doing the show? If it was true 1,000 years ago, God knew it, what choice did I have? And some see that as a problem. Some, trying to get away from that problem, they believe what they call open theism. It's the idea that, and it's an attempt to save our free will, is they argue that our free choices in order to be free are not known by God. God can't know our choices beforehand, because if he does, they're not free, okay? So if God doesn't know our choices, ideally, free will is saved. God doesn't know them, therefore, I am truly free at the last second to change my mind, okay? That's the argument anyway. Others argue that open theism doesn't solve the problem at all, okay? Suppose for a minute, let's get God out of the equation. Let's get God out of the equation completely, okay? Suppose there were no God, period. And suppose last year somebody made the statement, Cliff Goldstein is going to be speaking to you today on the Hope Channel, okay? The statement, Cliff is going to be speaking to you on the Hope Channel. Now, that statement last year was either true or false when it was made. If the statement, Cliff Goldstein is going to be speaking to you on Hope Channel on this day, if that statement was true last year, then did I have any other choice other than to be speaking to you on Hope Channel today? Questions, okay? Let me ask you two. Remember when Jesus told Peter that before the cock crows 3 times, you will betray me? Did Peter have any choice in the matter? If Jesus said to Peter, you're going to do it, then how could Peter have done anything else? The Lord himself said he was going to do it. So it seems he didn't have a choice. Not because Jesus forced him to do it, but only because Jesus predicted that he would. And the Lord said he would, so what other choice did he have other than to do it? Now, I'm not saying that I buy into these arguments or the various solutions before them. I'm simply saying that from a purely human perspective, the question of free will has all sorts, is problematic. To this day, all sorts of arguments for and against it have been raised, with everything from broad questions of metaphysics to neurophysiology being employed in the debates. Let me tell you one story. There was a man who got arrested for child molestation. They put him in jail. He had headaches. They gave him an MRI. They found he had a brain tumor. They cut the brain tumor out. And guess what? The man stopped molesting children. They let him go. A couple years later, he started molesting children again. They put him back in jail. He had a headache. They cut open his, they looked. He had the tumor, came back. They cut the tumor out, and he stopped molesting children. You know, you tell me what you do with stories like that. But anyway, my point is, from a purely philosophical human perspective, the question of free will, I admit, is problematic. But you know, we have in the Bible one event that answers, I believe, once and for all, the question of free will and the reality of human free will. And that is Jesus on the cross. All the grand philosophical issues against free will, I believe, are swept away by the reality of the Lord and Creator of all that was made, dying on the cross for the misuse of the free will that human beings have been given. Otherwise what? God predetermined us to sin, and then because of that predetermined sin, which we had no choice to commit, he died on the cross to save us, what he predetermined we were going to do from the beginning? I don't know, that doesn't make sense. I mean, use an analogy. Someone throws you in a raging river against your will. They throw you in the river, you don't want to go, they throw you in, and then they jump in and pull you out of the river. You know, and they save you. Well, how thankful should you be to them? How much of a favor did they do? But suppose that person warned you away from the river, offered you something better than the river, but you rejected that warning, and using your free will, your free choice, you jumped in the river, and you were swept away, and then that person jumped in the river after you and saved you. The latter analogy is a lot closer to what happened. You know, the bottom line of all this is, let me make the complicated simple. If we did not have free will, I mean true free will, then why would Jesus have died on the cross for us? The cross shows us not only the reality of free will, but the sacredness of it. You know, it all comes down to a thing I've preached on here before, love. Love is the grand overarching principle of all God's creation. God loves us, and we in response love him back. And the only way we can love God back is we are truly free. I said before, God can force every creature in the universe to fear him, to obey him, to worship him, but he can't force anyone to love him. The only way we could love God is if we were truly free, truly free. And that freedom entails risks. And God knew the risk beforehand. And yet, despite knowing the risk, despite knowing what happened, he says, I'm going to create them anyway. That's why the plan of salvation was put in place even before we sinned. I mean, the book of Timothy, 2 Timothy 1, 8, and 9, talked about our purpose and grace, which was given us in Jesus Christ before the world, before time began. Before time began. I mean, that's a long time ago, folks. That is, God knowing what would happen, nevertheless let it happen, rather than not to create us as free beings. In Ephesians, it says he chose us in him before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy and without blame before him. Before the foundation of the world, that is before we sinned, before we even existed, even before the world existed, God's plan was in place to save us from the violation of the freedom that love demanded. Again, I think there's an inseparable link between love and freedom. True love demands, yes, true freedom. You know, Russian novelist Fyodor Dostoevsky, in his grand work, The Brothers Karamazov, told the story of the Grand Inquisitor. It's a fascinating story. And in this story, Jesus returns to the earth, not in the grandeur and glory of the clouds of the second coming as depicted in Scripture, but he comes as the humble Galilean of the first coming. The problem is he comes at a rather inauspicious time. He comes at the height of the Inquisition in the 1600s. And he starts to do what Jesus did. He starts to do healings. And what happens? The Grand Inquisitor, seeing Jesus, has him immediately arrested and taken away. And later that night, in the story, he visits him in the dungeon. Now, the Grand Inquisitor knows full well who he is, because he's the symbol of ecclesiastical power and the power of the church. And the Grand Inquisitor starts to berate Jesus about him giving human beings freedom. He said, "You never should have done it. They can't handle it. They hate it. They don't, that it's ruined their lives. They have this gift of free will, but they don't know what to do with it. They don't want it. They can't handle it." He argues, he said, "Look, they just want someone to tell them what to do, someone to make their choices for them, just as long as those choices render them safe, secure, and well-fed." Now, let me read you what the Grand Inquisitor in Dostoevsky's story says to Jesus. And you know, there's a fair amount, I think he's got a point. He says to Jesus about the masses, "In the end, they will lay their freedom at our feet and say to us, 'Make us your slaves, but feed us.' They will understand together at last that freedom and bread enough for all are inconceivable together. For never, never will they be able to share between them. They will be convinced, too, that they can never be free, for they are weak, they are vicious, worthless, and rebellious. Thou did promise them the bread of heaven, but I repeat again, can it compare to earthly bread in the eyes of the weak, ever sinful, an ignoble race of man?" Woo! I mean, now that is cynical. That is just outright cynical. But you know, I'm sorry, folks. I think the Grand Inquisitor, to a certain degree, has a point. Okay, look at the world. Look at the mess of the world. Our free will has cause so much suffering, so much pain, so much damage. And yet, the cross of Christ, my point is, the cross of Christ is the ultimate example of, in fact, the ultimate example, the ultimate proof of what humanity, in the freedom given it, humans would do with that freedom, even to God. In other words, humans were made free. Jesus comes down, and what do humans in their freedom do? They hang their God on a cross. And yet, what the Grand Inquisitor didn't get, though, didn't understand, was that for God, this terrible cost was worth it. As we saw, I'm telling you, the Lord knew even from the start the terrible consequences that free will given human beings. He knew what it would be. Yet rather than not create us or not create us free, he did it anyway, knowing that the suffering that what would come from it, but knowing that it would do to him. He knew the suffering that it would bring to him on the cross, bearing the full brunt in himself of our pain and suffering. What we know individually, he bore corporately on the cross. But so sacred was free will that he did it anyway. In other words, at the cross, we see more graphically displayed anywhere else the reality of our free will. But so sacred is this gift, so fundamental to the essence of God's universe, that God said even before the fall, even before he created us, "Okay, I know what's going to happen, but I want them free because I want them to be able to love. And if it takes me going to the cross, I will endure it." That's how foundational love is. That's how basic love is to God's whole universe. Love is the foundation principle, and love to be love has to be free. Sin is real, temptation is real, and yes, forgiveness and grace is real. I don't know about you folks, but when temptation comes, there's the short moment that I experience. The short moment, almost this, I don't know, this neutral zone, I'm the sinful nature and the devil tempting, and all I know all that, but there's this moment when I sense my free moral being. I have a choice. I can succumb to the temptation, or I can choose through the power of God not to follow it, not to succumb to it. You know, we've been told that Satan can solicit sin. He can't compel us. So think about this. Every time you sin, every time you do something wrong, it's your own free choice. Sure, it can be hard. No one's denying that. What did Paul say at one point too? In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted unto the shedding of blood. When was the last time any one of you, I should ask myself as well, resisted the temptation to sin to the point of shedding blood? I challenge you, putting aside all the philosophical and physiological and scientific arguments about free will, I say that the sense of free choice that we think we have, it's not an illusion, folks. We really do have it. It is truly, we are in a mysterious way, we are truly free. In a way that I think only God understands, there's a certain moral autonomy that exists in each of us, a certain moral autonomy that we alone control. Yes, the Holy Spirit prompts us, but the prompting is not forcing us. The devil tempts us, but the devil is not forcing us. There's this mysterious thing somewhere up here in the gray matter, somewhere between the neurons or in the neurons, that this alone gives us the freedom to make the choice whether we are going to follow the promptings of the Holy Spirit and do what is right or follow the promptings of the flesh. You know, I understand free choice and I understand failures. But the reality of free will, free choice, you know, over 30 some years ago, and I would point you to my website to get to the story on the Hope Channel. But I had to make a choice in which my eternal destiny at that moment rested. And it was my free choice whether I do it or not. It was very scary to even think about that now, the freedom we truly have.